recreational talk, and in fact it will more have this character. What I would like to do is to explain an old classical result from convex geometry and explain some more recent applications. I will talk about Minkowski's existence and uniqueness theorem, and today I would mainly like to concentrate on the existence part, and tomorrow some refinements of the uniqueness part. So what does this theorem say? Consider a convex polytope. For the moment in three space, and so it has got outer normal vectors, unit normal vectors to its facets, and let's call these U1 to U capital N, and the facets have areas S1 to Sn, and Minkowski's theorem is an answer to a very simple question. Suppose that for some reason you want to prescribe the normal vectors and the areas, and the question is there a polytope? Of course, the normal vectors should span the space positively. So at first sight, at least to me, this looks highly improbable, except in dimension 2, where the answer is trivial, of course. In dimension 2, these normal vectors come with a natural orientation, and we just take the first one, and we know the length of the face, so we start at some point and take the vector orthogonal to U1 of the prescribed length, and then we take the next vector with prescribed length, and so on. Well, and either if we have consumed all the vectors and length, either the polygon closes or it does not, and it closes if and only if the sum UISI is the zero vector. So this is a necessary condition for the existence of this polygon, and in the plane apparently also a sufficient condition. And the rather surprising fact, I'm still astonished, is that also in higher dimension, this condition, which is rather trivially also necessary, turns out to be sufficient. So that this is necessary in higher dimensions follows immediately from the translation invariance of volume. But that it is sufficient is still, to me, a surprising fact. In fact, the result holds more generally for general convex bodies. So if there is a convex body, I have to say what the area measure is. This is the sphere. We are now in RD. This is a convex body, and we prescribe on the unit sphere, we prescribe some Borel set, omega, and look for the boundary points of the convex body where there exists an outer unit normal vector falling into the set omega of unit vectors. So outer unit normal vector in the sense of normal vector of a supporting hyperplane. So we do not assume any smoothness. There need not be tangent planes or so. So we get a certain set on the boundary where the normal vectors are inside omega, and this is also Borel set, and so it has an area, say the D minus one dimensional Hausdorff area. Let's call this set tau of K and omega. And this defines the number SK of omega, and as a function of omega, this turns out to be a measure. And SK, S sub K, is the area measure of K. And in a trivial way, this relation extends. So we have the integral, this vector-valued integral over the unit sphere, zero vector always. And Minkowski's theorem essentially says that this condition also in the general case is sufficient, and I will give you the formulation on the I think this was connected to the other one too. You don't care about my safety. And yes. So I have written down a formulation of Minkowski's theorem. Let mu be a finite Borel measure on the unit sphere, not concentrated on a great subsphere, and satisfying this vector equation. And then there is a convex body for which this given measure is the area measure, and this body is unique up to a translation. As I said, I still find this result surprising, even for polytopes, and you could not start constructing the polytope in any way. That would be hopeless. So it must be proved in some different way, and in spite of the strength of the theorem, the proof is rather easy, given some basic facts from the classical theory of mixed volumes of convex bodies. And I recall here the essential steps, just to show that essentially this comes out of the Brunn-Minkowski theory, including the equality conditions. So if we consider two convex bodies and a Minkowski linear combination of them, then the dth root of the volume is a concave function of the parameter by Brunn-Minkowski's theorem. And in this situation where K and M are convex bodies, we all also know that equality holds if and only if K and M are homothetic. On the other hand, one knows that this volume has a polynomial expansion in the parameter, and the coefficients up to normalization are the so-called mixed volumes. And we need not know more about these, that just they occur as coefficients here. And the notation is such that I, this is the historic notation, that I is the degree of homogeneity of the second argument. So I occurs here and belongs to M. Essentially, we will need only V1 of K and M. So since this is a concave function, it looks like this. This is the graph of the function F here, the dth root of the volume. And since it is concave, the tangent at 0 has its graph above the graph of F. So this point is above this point, which means the derivative at 0 is greater or equal F1 minus F0. On the other hand, we can compute the derivatives because we have a polynomial, the root of a polynomial. And doing this gives precisely this inequality for the coefficient V1 and the volumes of the two convex bodies. So this is Minkowski's classical inequality for this mixed volume. And, of course, equality here is only possible if the graph coincides with this graph, and then we have equality in von Minkowski's inequality, and we know that this holds only if K and M are homothetic. So we have also the equality condition here. By the way, if M is the unit ball, then this would just be the surface area of K up to a factor 2. And so this gives the isoperimetric inequality for convex bodies as well.
What? So many people came just.
Oh, well, but the people who came know this theorem very well.
We saw the lectures on the other place.
I was sent it. Today it's here. So. Yes. You stay some time.
So what I'm doing is I'm explaining the classical theorem of Minkowski because later I want to go to some more recent applications of the existence part of it. So we have just the first steps for the proof, and the second step will as easy. What we need is an integral representation. These area measure explained here and the support function are combined to give a formula for the volume, and this is also trivial. It just, in the polytope case, it results from decomposing polytope from an interior point into pyramids and summing up the volumes of the pyramids. And from this formula, one also gets an integral representation for this mixed volume, which appears here. The support function is appearing here. And now the uniqueness part of Minkowski's theorem is easy. Suppose we have two always d-dimensional convex bodies with the same area measure. Then these two measures are the same, and with this measure we integrate the support function, say, of M. And because of these integral representations, we get this equality. And to this we apply Minkowski's inequality from the last side. But since this is the volume here cancels, and we get just that the volume of M is greater or equal to the volume of K, and we can interchange K and M because this is symmetric. So we get equality of the volumes, which means we must have equality here. And by the equality in Minkowski's inequality, this gives us that M and K are homothetic, and because they have the same surface area measures, they are then translates of each other. So the uniqueness result is proved very easily using mixed volumes, and it would be much harder if you would consider this under smoothness assumptions as a uniqueness result for the corresponding differential equality. And so this is elementary. Now the existence, Minkowski's inequality already shows us or gives us a hint how to prove the existence. Suppose mu, the measure, satisfies this necessary condition. And first assume that a body K exists which has this measure as its area measure, and then we take any other convex body M, and since this is the area measure of K, we have here this integral gives us the mixed volume, and by Minkowski's inequality this can be estimated from below by the volumes of M and K, with equality only if M and K are homothetic. So if we assume that the volume of this general body is 1, then we see that this functional to M, we associate the mu integral of its support function, that this function attains its minimum at a convex body which is homothetic to K. So this is true if K exists, if the solution exists. And now one uses this in the reverse direction. One solves this minimum problem, integral support function of M d mu has to be a minimum under the side condition that M has volume 1. And it's not difficult to see that this problem has a solution, and since the solution solves a variational, is a minimum property, there must be some generalized Euler-Lagrange equation. And by some variational argument, one sees that this equation is just the area measure is a multiple of the measure mu. So if we dilate this convex body by a suitable factor, then we get a body which has precisely mu as its area measure. This variational argument is for general convex bodies not so easy. It has been done by Alexandrov after some other author had a wrong argument, but the original approach by Minkowski, first to treat polytopes, there the variational argument is elementary, and then one can obtain the general result by approximation. So this is just a reminder of Minkowski's existence and uniqueness theorem, and what would such a result now be good for? Where does it appear that, well, we have a given measure and want a convex body for which this measure is the area measure. I won't need this for a while. Well, I don't know of many real-life problems where one would need such a polytope of given area, areas and directions of its facets, but in fact some people seem to be interested in this, at least for polytopes in three space. I've seen some papers about robot vision or computer geometry where, in fact, the authors are interested in algorithms for an effective, efficient construction of these polytopes. But I do not know much about that, so I don't talk about that. But I would more be interested in explaining some applications where, in fact, the full strength for, of the existent result for general measures is needed. Maybe I should first recall some old applications. Maybe the first application was that it was noted that this existence theorem leads to a new combination of convex bodies, because if we have two convex bodies, K and M, we can consider their area measures and add them, and this sum will satisfy the assumptions for Minkowski's existence theorem. So there exists a convex body for which this is the area measure. Let's call this body K double plus M. So this process of Blaschke addition has found some applications. Let me mention only one in connection to projection volumes. If we have a convex body and project orthogonally onto a hyperplane, and then we get some projection volume here as a function of this. Let's call this V d minus 1, K projected orthogonally onto the orthogonal complement of the vector U. And this is expressible by the area measure. We take the absolute value of the scalar product, dsk of v, which is easily seen for polytopes and then results by approximation. So in other words, this projection function here is the cosine transform of the area measure, and for that reason, Minkowski's theorem has been used in connection to projection volumes. For instance, one remark is the following. If we are given, we know of a convex body, say we know its projection volumes, and would like to maximize the volume of the body, and then it immediately results that the maximum is always attained by centrosymmetric convex bodies. So given any convex body, we can form K plus, in the sense of Blaschke addition, minus K. And because of this representation, it has the same projection function. It is centrosymmetric, this body, by uniqueness part of Minkowski's theorem. And as a consequence of the Brunn-Minkowski theorem, one half of this has bigger volume. So in many questions about projection volumes, the volumes will be extremal for centrally symmetric bodies. Sure. Another question related to projection volumes is the following one. Suppose we have, well, this is the predecessor of the now well-known Busemann-Petty problem, but for projections where it is much more elementary and older. Suppose we have two convex bodies, centrally symmetric in this case, where we have an inequality between the projection volumes. And the question first posed by Shepard was whether it follows that one has a corresponding inequality for the volumes. And as it turned out, this is not true in general. It is true if this body K is a zonoid. But if this other body is not a zonoid and sufficiently smooth, then a counterexample here can be constructed. And this, in fact, uses Minkowski's existence theorem in some way. So one last old application should be mentioned. As I said, this is a recreational talk, and so it may be recreational to see which is the trick here.
This is so easily pure stein.
No. Well, not where I wanted it, but well, it should work, huh? Oh, I spoiled it. Well, that's a good idea, yeah, but oh,
this is the best.
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, this was pretty good for a pure mathematician.
Just to blow and then write fix.
So I would like to recall, to remind you of Santalo's proof of the Blaschke-Santalo inequality. There is some magic appearing in it. Namely, his argument was the following. We have a convex body K, and we translate it by a vector Z, which must be in the interior. And so with respect to Z, we take the polar body and the volume of this, and this function attains its minimum at a unique point, and we may assume that this minimum point is zero. And then again, we have a solution of a minimum problem, and there must be a variational condition, and this is this vector equation. The support function of the body to the power minus d plus 1 times the position vector must give the zero vector. And now, so this means that this measure here satisfies the assumptions of Minkowski's existence theorem. And so by Minkowski's existence theorem, there exists a convex body C for which this measure is precisely the area measure. And then by some computations, it turns out that the volume of this polar body is nothing but the affine surface area of this auxiliary body. Now, I don't repeat here the definition of the affine surface area. It has appeared in some previous talks. And it also turns out that this can be written as a mixed volume of this auxiliary body, taken d minus 1 times, and the convex body taken once. And now, Santalo just applied the so-called affine isoperimetric inequality, which says that for a given volume, the maximum of the affine surface area is attained precisely by ellipsoids. So this is the affine isoperimetric inequality, where we have here the volume of the polar body and use this equation. And now by Minkowski's inequality, because here Minkowski's inequality for this mixed volume gives this inequality. And this mixed volume is nothing but the volume of the polar body, and so something cancels here, and what remains is nothing but the Blaschke-Santalo inequality. So this is the classical proof of Santalo, following some ideas of Blaschke, but I wanted to point out here that this proof involves Minkowski's existence theorem in some unexpected way. So one
finite experimental inequality. Is it need definition of the fact that it's a fine surface area? Just to cancel a fine surface area from proof, is what I request.
To cancel, no, but the affine isoperimetric, this inequality is...
You have V1 instead, yes? V1 CK. So is it...
Sure, you could... copy the proof and use this instead of the definition. Yeah, well, but I don't see the point. I mean, in any case, one needs Steiner symmetrization at this point.
Yes, I did not know what it is, a fine isoperimetric inequality. I had difficulties with the text of Santalo.
Uh-huh.
So that it perhaps not necessary. Yes.
Yeah, but after all, one knows now simpler proofs using Steiner symmetrization in a more direct way. But okay, so that's enough of history, and I would now like to.
Yeah, affine isoperimetric inequality can also be proved by symmetrization.
Only. Up to now, yeah. So I would now like to come to some more recent and maybe some more surprising applications.
What do you mean?
By the way.
Yeah, I want to ask, is it that affine surface area should be preserved under Steiner symmetrization because it's more connected with volume, no?
No.
An infinitesimal piece change. Yeah? So what is going? It's decay. What going with the fine surface area and the Steiner symmetrization?
Just the opposite as the from the normal surface area. The normal surface area gets smaller. Affine surface area gets bigger under Steiner symmetrization. So what I would like to talk about are applications of the full Minkowski existence theorem in an unexpected connection, I want to say. And this is some possible applications in stochastic geometry. And since this is recreational here, let me start with a game or a bet. We do the following. We have a circle in the plane and a random line meeting the circle. So the random line should be isotropic uniform. What does it mean? It has a direction, and this direction is chosen uniformly among all directions. And given the direction, then the distance, say, from the origin is also uniform in that interval for which we have intersection with the circle. So this is an isotropic uniform random line meeting the circle. And
sorry, can you repeat this second? Can you please repeat this uniform? What's the distribution?
I haven't written down it exactly. I said the direction is uniform. Okay. And given the direction, the distance from the parameter under parallel translation is also uniform with respect to Lebesgue measure. But we restrict all this to the situation where the line hits.
Okay.
So this definition of a uniform isotropic random line hitting the circle. And now we take two of these with the same distribution, independent. And if they have an intersection point inside the circle, you give me a dollar. And if not, I give you a dollar. And would you do that? Is it a fair game? Well, just a guess.
but what is a game? You are doing this, we have no choice.
Oh. Well,
what do you want to be playing one or playing two?
Okay.
I leave it
to you. Which player do you want to be?
No, I took immediately what you took for yourself.
Well, but you know me that I'm honest and fair.
Because of this, what does this say, correct?
Well, okay, it's a fair game. So the probability that they meet inside the circle is by chance is 1/2. But now, I mean, we could play this on a computer. It's not a problem to generate isotropic random lines. But now, let us suppose the computer is not okay and cannot produce isotropic lines, but produces lines with some other orientation or direction distribution. And the question is whether then it will again be a fair game. And evidently not. Let us suppose this is a circle here of directions. Let us suppose the direction distribution is concentrated in these points so that we have only horizontal and only vertical lines, each with, say, same probability. And then, of course, well, if you have two parallel lines, then we have no intersection, but with probability 1/2, we will have a vertical and a horizontal line, but the intersection points will not necessarily be in the circle. But we could make this a fair game, again, if we replace the circle, say, by a square, because then whenever we have an intersection point, it will be inside the square, and so the probability comes back to 1/2 again. And now suppose that we have only horizontal and only vertical lines, but with different probabilities, say horizontal lines, so these are the normal vectors, horizontal lines with probability p and vertical with probability 1 minus p. And so we would try to take a rectangle of side length a and b, and if I remember correctly, the probability for, say, intersection, this is intersection point in K is as P 1 minus P A B, if A and B are the side lengths, over P
A is
K is this rectangle with side lengths A and B, and just an elementary formula, but I got it's PA plus 2, it's 2, PA plus 1 minus PB squared. And now to make this probability a maximum, it turns out that we have to have P over B, we one as one minus P over A. So the side length here have to be chosen in order to maximize these probabilities in dependence on P and 1 minus P. And you see this is exactly the length of this has been chosen proportional to P, and this length the same proportionality factor to this one. In other words, if we use the measure given by this distribution to generate a convex body via Minkowski's existence theorem, so if we choose, let us say, the direction distribution is phi, and we choose a convex body such that its area measure in the plane now is this direction distribution, then, in fact, also in the general case of an arbitrary distribution here, it turns out that precisely these bodies gives the maximum of the intersection probabilities. And this is, so to say, in a nutshell, what I want to explain in a little more detail. Replacing elementary geometric probabilities by objects which are studied in stochastic geometry. This is a field which in the last 30 years has developed partly due to some requirements from applications like stereology. This is stereology tries to get three-dimensional information on real materials from lower-dimensional information like sections. And, for example, what people did, you have a piece of material, rock or a metal or something, and there are some inclusions in it. And you want to estimate the volume ratio of these inclusions compared to the whole volume. And what practitioners did was cutting this or... mostly the materials can only be observed in planar cuts, and then take the area ratio here in the plane and use this as an estimator for the volume ratio. And if one wants to, and this has only also been done with other functionals, And in order to justify such a procedure, one has to make some model assumptions, and one model assumption which came out of such practical requirements was that one considers the material which one is investigating as a realization of some random set, and well, then one needs with suitable additional assumptions, and then one can justify such procedures. This is one source for stochastic geometry. At this point, let me consider another little question, but which was a motivation for Roger Miles to consider random flats. And he was given the following question by a paper manufacturing company. Suppose we have a sheet of paper, and this is made out of fibers. And what they wanted to know is, well, the idea is that the intersection points, at the intersection points, these fibers are glued together somehow. And the idea was that the strength of paper against destroying it depends on the density of the intersection points of the fibers. And so he was asked, given the mean amount of fibers per volume, for which directions of the fibers here does one get the highest density for the intersection points? And Miles modeled this by, well, fibers are very long, and let us consider they are lines. And so they are random lines. And we assume some homogeneity, of course. So we assume, although the paper is finite, we assume that this extends over the whole plane and is homogeneous under translations, and we cut out a small piece. And so he modeled this by a random process, in fact, for some reason to which I will come back, by a Poisson process of lines in the plane, a homogeneous Poisson process. And then the question arises, if the intensity, which is the mean fiber length per area, the expected mean fiber length per area, if this intensity is given, under which assumptions on the direction distributions do we get the highest density of intersection points? So this was one motivation for Miles to consider random systems of first lines, but then also k-dimensional flats or hyperplanes. And I will come back to that in a minute. But before that, I would like to explain the notion of a Poisson process, which will be used to define Poisson systems of, say, hyperplanes or convex bodies and so on. So a familiar idea which has occurred in several or in some talks is that we have a convex set in the plane and a given number of independent uniform random points inside this set. But now assume we want to have a larger set, or in fact we would like to have, well, uniformly distributed independent random points in the whole plane, which doesn't work because the plane has infinite area. But the idea, basic idea, of course, is to blow this convex set up and to increase the number of random points proportional to the area, and then to hope that there is some limit. And there is some reasonable limit, and this leads to the notion of a Poisson point process. And I would like to first to explain this in a general form, because want not only points but convex bodies or flats. So what we start with is a locally compact space with a countable base, and we consider the locally finite subsets. So a subset is locally finite if it meets every compact set in a finite set. This is number of elements here. This is no longer volume, but it's number of elements. And script F is the system of all locally finite subsets. And we want that the counting functions are measurable. So if we have any Borel set in E, and then any F in script F has a certain number of elements in A, and for each A this defines the counting function, and we want all these functions to be measurable, so we take the smallest sigma algebra for which all these are measurable. And then a simple point process in E is just a random variable on some probability space with values in script F. So the realizations are just locally finite point sets in E. And the expectation of this counting function here for each Borel set, we count for every realization the points inside A. This is a random variable, the number, and the expectation defines a measure as a function of A. This is the intensity measure of this point process. And this is a point process, is a Poisson process. If this intensity measure is finite on compact sets, and this counting function has a Poisson distribution, so the probability that in the set A there are precisely J points is given by this Poisson expression. So this is the natural thing to do if one wants to extend the notion of uniform independent points, because this Poisson process has the following properties. If we take pairwise disjoint Borel sets and consider the intersections, which each of these, so look only at the points falling in the set A, then these point processes are stochastically independent. So this is one important property. And the second shows us that we have, in fact, a close connection to uniformly distributed points. We consider any set with finite positive intensity measure and consider the condition, introduce the condition that precisely K points of the process are in A. And under this condition, the intersection process is stochastically equivalent to the point process defined by K independent, identically distributed random points in A, which have the distribution, well, theta restricted to A and normalized to a probability measure. So locally, under the condition of fixed number of points, we have the situation which I mentioned initially. Finally, there are sufficiently many Poisson processes to every locally finite Borel measure which has no atoms. There is a Poisson process on the space which has the given measure as its intensity measure, and it is unique up to stochastic equivalence. So this general notion is now applied. I mean, I took a general space E, and maybe you thought of the case where this is RD, but you should also think of the case for which this is the space of convex bodies with a Hausdorff metric, which is also a locally compact space with a countable base. So we may now consider Poisson processes in the space of convex bodies, for example. I will not speak about this, but I should mention that there is a well-developed theory of such Poisson processes of convex bodies and of their union sets. This is the so-called Boolean model, called Boolean model because it has nothing to do with Boole. A favorite model for all, so the union set, this would be a random closed set, and it's one model about which much can be proved. Maybe this is time for a commercial again. I show you a Boolean model. Several simulations of Boolean models. The black things are Poisson processes of circles in the plane, of congruent circles, and the union set, it looks as if it could model quite a number of patterns in material sciences also, and the advantage it was not really meant to be a commercial. The advantage is that one can prove quite a number of properties of these models. But
it cannot be, it is in German.
I was surprised I don't see this book.
So what I want would like to consider now are Poisson processes in the space of k-dimensional flats. So A stands for the affine Grassmannian, but I have this on slides here. We want to apply this to the space of k-flats in Rd. So X, capital X, is now a Poisson process in the space of flats, and we know what its intensity measure is. But now there comes a new aspect on Rd. We have the motion group acting and the translation group, and they act also on the space of flats. So we can now say that this process is stationary, respectively isotropic, if the intensity measure is invariant under translations or rotations. There is a number associated with a stationary x, namely its intensity. It has an easy explanation. We consider all f, all flats, in a realization of our process, and consider only those hitting the unit ball. And the number of this set is a random variable. Its expectation up to some normalizing factor gives us the intensity of the process. But even maybe more intuitive is the second interpretation of the intensity. We consider the k-dimensional Lebesgue measure of the intersections of the flats with a given set of Lebesgue measure 1, like the black set here. And we consider only the intersections and add up the k-dimensional volumes. So this would be a random measure as a function of A, but here we insert a fixed A, and the expectation of this is the intensity. So it's the mean, could say the mean expected k-dimensional volume per unit volume. Now we are interested in hyperplane processes. So the immediate extension of the line processes to higher dimensions, and we consider only stationary such processes, and then we can decompose the intensity measure in this way. There is a probability measure on the unit sphere. And you see here, I denote hyperplanes in this way. If we have a unit vector u, u orthogonal is the orthogonal hyperplane through 0. And this is now translated by the vector t times u. So t is the parameter of parallel translation of the hyperplanes. And so for a fixed direction u, we consider all hyperplanes with normal vector u, which belong to the given set. This is integrated only over the translations. And finally, one integrates over all directions. And the assertion is that there is such a decomposition in the stationary case. And so this measure here, this probability measure, here's the intensity, this probability measure is the direction distribution. And the intuitive interpretation is easy if we have a Borel set of unit vectors, say without antipodal points, because I consider unoriented hyperplanes. Then I consider the number of all hyperplanes in the process which hit the unit ball and have a normal vector in the given set. And the expectation of this number is a factor times intensity times the direction distribution evaluated at omega. So this is a simultaneous interpretation of the intensity and the direction distribution. Now, I said these structures are meant as models for finite materials or whatever, but to make a smooth theory, one usually has the stationarity assumption. So, in fact, one will observe such a structure only inside a given window, and so this is the usual situation that one has mostly a convex window, and inside this window the structure is observed. And now we are interested in a very basic question, namely, if we have our hyperplane process and we have an observation window of given volume, what will be the expected number of hyperplanes hitting this window? Of course, this can be arbitrarily large. If we make the body very long and thin for given volume, then it will hit many hyperplanes. But there must be a non-trivial minimum of expected hitting hyperplanes. And so now I consider a stationary Poisson hyperplane process with given intensity and direction distribution. And I assume that it is non-degenerate, which means that the orientation distribution is not concentrated on the great subsphere. Otherwise, there would be a line with the property that almost surely all the hyperplanes of the process are parallel to this line, and then, I would reduce the whole situation to the orthogonal subspace. So, now here, so what is the... which convex bodies of given volume attain the minimum of the expected hitting hyperplanes? And you will not be surprised by now that when I tell you that the solution can only be achieved using Minkowski's existence theorem. We take this direction distribution times the intensity measure, and this satisfies the assumption of Minkowski's existence theorem, although it has nothing to do with the surface area, but phi is a probability measure ruling the directions of the random hyperplanes. And by Minkowski's existence theorem, the measure is even, so the integral condition is satisfied. There is a convex body B of X for which this measure is the surface area measure. It has been called, unfortunately, the Blaschke body, should better be called Minkowski body. And the result is that if K is a convex body with given volume, then the expected number of hyperplanes of the process hitting K is minimal precisely if K is homothetic to the Blaschke body. There are some variants of this. Instead of prescribing the volume, we could prescribe the expected number of intersection points in K and get the same result. By intersection points, I mean the following. We are now in the hyperplane case. So if any number between 1 and D is given, I could take, in any realization of this hyperplane process, I can take any K hyperplanes in general position and form their intersection, which is an N minus K, D minus K flat. And in this way, I get a new process of D minus K flats, the intersection process of order K. And the question of Miles regarding paper making now has several higher dimensional analogs. I may ask, given the intensity of the hyperplane process, which direction distributions will give the maximum kth intersection density? So, but I think I have the definition on a slide. So this is what I just said, and we get a stationary process of D minus K flats, and for such flats I explained that I defined the intensity before. So it has an intensity, the mean expected K volume per unit volume, and we call this the kth intersection density of K of X. And then Miles' question generalizes as follows. For given intensity gamma, which processes X yield the maximal kth intersection density? And also this can be answered if we consider not the Blaschke body, but its projection body called M of X. In order to define this, we do not need Minkowski's existence theorem. We can just write down the support function of this body. In terms, it is a cosine transform of the measure gamma times direction distribution. So this is a support function, and this body was originally introduced by Matteron, who has written a book on random sets and integral geometry. And there now happens a miracle. well, not a miracle, but very surprising, namely this parameter, the intersection density of this process here, can be expressed as an intrinsic volume of this auxiliary convex body. And then, of course, one can apply the Alexander-Fenchel inequalities and immediately gets that for given intensity, the maximum of the intersection density of order k is assumed precisely if this body is a ball, which is equivalent to the isotropy of the process. So this is also for the answer to Miles' question. The maximal intersection density is attained if and only if the direction distribution of the process is invariant under rotations. So I
can... This should be connected. It's connected, of course, but it's the fact that this K intrinsic volume is a measure of this subspace which intersects body K and minus K. No? K and N minus K in my definition. But if you take... Yes, no, just I ask, but it's perhaps obvious.
Uh-huh. Can we return to that question later? Because okay. I need more explanations.
Okay. Well,
I'm finished in a few minutes. As a last question, I would like to, very briefly, if we have such a hyperplane process, it induces a tessellation of space into convex polytopes. And also this tessellation has been intensely studied. In particular, we could take a fixed point, say the origin, and look at that polytope which contains polytope of the tessellation which contains this point. It's usually called the zero cell, so this is a random polytope, and the cell of the tessellation containing zero, the zero cell. And there are some results. For example, in the plane, if we have a Poisson process of lines, is there any guess about the expected number of vertices of this zero polygon? Well, more likely to be 3 or more likely to be 17? Well, one cannot guess. No guess. It's p square over 2, 4.9. The expected value of the number of vertices. And there are some results in higher dimensions, but I mentioned this only as a side remark. The expected volume of the zero cell, given the intensity of the process, is minimal if and only if the process is isotropic. And here is a nice inequality, which I only mention as a side remark. The expected number of vertices of this cell is bounded from above by this and from below by this. And maybe you recognize like Blaschke-Santalo inequality. And in fact, it turns out that this expected number of vertices of the zero cell is precisely the volume product of the body M of X, which was constructed before. So the Blaschke-Santalo inequality gives the upper bound, and the auxiliary body is a zonoid, and therefore we have the sharp lower bound here due to Reissner. So this has this surprising interpretation in terms of expected vertex numbers here. One last question is, if we consider a convex body containing zero and want to find the body for which the probability that it is contained of given volume, want to maximize the probability that it is contained in the unit cell. And again, we need Minkowski's theorem now to find the solution among all convex bodies with zero in K and given volume positive, precisely the homothetic copies of the Blaschke body maximize the probability that this body is contained in the zero cell. One very last remark is also concerned with the zero cell, and is related to a very old question of David Kendall. He considered a Poisson line process in the plane, isotropic and stationary. And the zero cell, and he considered the zero cell under the condition that it has an area at least A. And under the condition that the area of the zero cell is at least A, he conjectured that the shape of the zero cell becomes circular as A tends to infinity, which is very plausible if it gets larger and larger, then more lines maybe contribute to a facet, but all the lines are equally distributed, so it should be a circle. But surprisingly, this was open for more than 50 years, but it was propagated only in the 80s, and he wrote that he conjectured it somewhere in the 40s, and now he warmed it up, the problem, and it became well known in the 80s, and several people contributed to it, and Miles published a paper with the title A Heuristic Proof of Kendall's Conjecture. So he gave strong arguments, but still not the proof. And the proof was, for this planar case, the proof was done by Kovalenko, 97, with an improved version, 99. And we have been interested, when I say we, this is Daniel Hook, Matthias Reitzner, and myself, interest in extending this to higher dimensions, which is only technically more complicated, but requires no more ideas. But the more interesting generalization is that to non-isotropic Poisson hyperplanes, where we have some given direction distribution, so we cannot longer expect a circle here as a limit shape, but the problem is what can we expect? And again, here comes Minkowski's theorem. So we now have a stationary Poisson hyperplane process, and we now consider the convex body homothetic to the Blaschke body before, but the one for which the direction distribution is the area measure, so without intensity here. And we need a measure of the... So I claim that the shape of this solution of Minkowski's theorem is precisely the asymptotic shape of the zero cell under the condition that the area tends to infinity. And to make that precise, we need a measure of deviation from this body, which is just defined in this way. We squeeze K between two concentric homothetic copies and take the quotient here, minus 1. So this number is 0 precisely if B, K is homothetic to B, and otherwise it measures the deviation from the shape. It's invariant under homotheties of K and B. So it measures only the deviation from the shape of B. And the precise result is here, for sufficiently small epsilon, and given some fixed lower bounds, we consider the zero cell under the condition that its area is bigger than A, where A is bigger than this fixed bound here. So we consider the probability that the deviation of the zero cell is at least epsilon, this deviation, the deviation of the zero cell from B, under the condition that the volume of the zero cell is at least A. And this probability can be estimated in this way. So here we have the bound, and here we have the intensity. So if either the area or the intensity tends to infinity, then the zero cell becomes more and more close to a homothetic copy of this body. So again, here we have a solution to an extremal, to not an extremal problem, but to a shape problem which could not be answered without an application of Minkowski's existence theorem. So that's all.
Okay, the next lecture is...